Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with the Pantograph of Friday, August 21st, 2020. Let's go to the front page. Here we have a story headlined, Ready to Get Going. Officials tout $8 million U.S. grant for downtown bus transfer station. And it's accompanied by a picture of a table with a big poster next to it. And the caption reads, U.S. Representatives Darren LaHood and Rodney Davis on Thursday talked together before the start of a press conference that celebrated an $8 million grant to Connect Transit for the construction of a transfer center in downtown Bloomington. And this story is datelined Normal. A planned Connect Transit bus transfer station for downtown Bloomington was touted as a key to better service and a potential economic driver at a gathering to thank area U.S. House members for their help in obtaining a recently announced $8 million federal grant for the project. Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner said with the federal grant, "We are on the next phase of moving forward." Board Chairman Ryan Whitehouse said the transfer station has been a vital project for at least the 8 years that he has served on the board. The amenities are really not there that we need and our riders and customers demand, Whitehouse said at a celebration Thursday afternoon at Connect Transit's bus barn on Wiley Drive, attended by Republican representatives Darren LaHood of Dunlap and Rodney Davis of Taylorville. I'm very, very optimistic with this money and the money we receive from the state of Illinois. We are ready to move and we are ready to get going, said Whitehouse. The station would replace the current on-street bus transfer area, which serves 10 routes and sees about 1,800 boardings a day. The project's cost has been previously estimated at between $10 and $14 million. Renner said the transfer station is critical for having a mobile workforce, but its importance goes beyond transit needs. This is about the quality of life, the nature of economic development, and jobs for our community, he said. Describing the transfer station as one of our anchors in our downtown, Renner said, not only will that help revitalize and make downtown even more exciting, more of an important destination for our future, but we know capital investment will attract more capital investment and more investment beyond that. LaHood and Davis credited transit system leadership and community cooperation for Connect Transit receiving this competitive grant and nearly $25 million in other federal grants over the last 10 years. None of this could happen without local communities coming together and planning for the future, said Davis. LaHood called it a team effort and said the words that come to mind when he thinks of Connect Transit are, innovation, collaboration, community buy-in, but also delivering a product that is efficient, effective, reliable, and looks out for the safety of your citizens here. In addition to a time for thanking federal officials for their help in obtaining the grant, the gathering was also a farewell for the system's general manager, Isaac Thorne, whose last day is Friday. He is leaving to become director of transit for Knoxville Area Transit in Tennessee. Thorne has been with Connect Transit for 13 years, starting as a part-time dispatcher. He initiated the Better Bus Stop campaign, mobile ticketing, an annual rider and customer satisfaction surveys, and he was given an old fare box as a farewell gift. And our next front page story is about local businesses, and it is headlined, Bloomington Normal May Enforce Mask and Distancing Rules. Mayors say the businesses may face fines and loss of liquor licenses. It's Dateline Bloomington. Leaders in Bloomington and Normal say there could be consequences for businesses that do not follow state rules for mask usage and other measures aimed at preventing the spread of COVID-19. Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner said in a video message Thursday that businesses failing to comply with Illinois Department of Public Health rules could face fines and the loss of their liquor licenses. Normal Mayor Chris Koos told the Pantograph on Thursday that he had sent a letter to the town's establishments with liquor licenses urging them to comply. If we have institutions, establishments that are not abiding by the law, I will not only give them hefty fines, but in some cases, if necessary, I will revoke their liquor licenses, Renner said. This is very serious. This behavior is unacceptable, and we have got to band together to move forward. Under emergency rules issued by Governor J.B. Pritzker and approved by a legislative panel last week, businesses are required to enforce rules about face masks and the size of gatherings. Specifically, the emergency rules say, businesses, schools, daycare facilities, and other organizations must require employees, customers, and others on the premises to cover their nose and mouth with a face covering. Gatherings of more than 50 people are prohibited. If a building's maximum capacity is fewer than 50 people, gatherings must not exceed 50% of the capacity. Koos told the Pantograph on Thursday that he had received about a dozen complaints from residents about liquor establishments and a lack of social distancing. He declined to identify which businesses had prompted the complaints. As a liquor licensee in the town of Normal, you have the legal duty to follow the law, Koos wrote to the businesses in a letter dated August 11th. In addition to the penalties under the Public Health Department's emergency rule, a failure to abide by health regulations and other laws may result in the revocation or non-renewal of your liquor license. Koos told the businesses that he understood they have struggled with challenges during the pandemic and appreciated their willingness to do their part. I am thanking you in advance for your cooperation and your dedication in keeping Normal safe and prosperous, he said. Renner appeared in a video that also featured remarks from Bloomington City Manager Tim Gleason and representatives from the Bloomington Police and Fire Departments. Acting Police Chief Greg Scott said the city would prefer that businesses comply with the rules voluntarily. If police see or respond to a report of violations occurring, they will first issue a notice of noncompliance, warning the business that it is not abiding by IDPH guidelines. If police return a second time, another notice will be issued and they will take a police report, which would be reviewed by the city's legal department, county state's attorney, and county health department. We would really rather have voluntary compliance, Scott said. Gleason said there is a delicate balance between restarting the community's economy and keeping residents safe. We ask that everyone, whether it is the employees in the different establishments, the owners, the patrons, please be responsible and police yourself so that we don't have to, he said. The warning comes as McLean County reported 51 new cases on Wednesday and 42 on Thursday. Both days saw a majority of the new cases confirmed in people who are in their 20s and younger. Leaders at both Illinois Wesleyan University and Illinois State University have expressed concerns about large gatherings off campus and a lack of social distancing and mask usage. Both institutions have had multiple students test positive this week. Classes started Monday. Illinois Wesleyan on Thursday reported 9 additional cases of COVID-19 that were believed to originate from off-campus social gatherings at which participants did not wear masks and practice social distancing. A total of 19 students are now connected to the outbreak related to off-campus social events the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday before classes began Monday. Under Illinois Department of Public Health guidelines for restaurants and bars in Phase 4 of the state's reopening plan, tables must be placed 6 feet apart, parties must be of 10 or fewer people, and in areas with standing room, there is a limit of 25% of the area's capacity. But for some businesses, limiting the number of people inside has led to another issue, people clustering outside. Groups of young people not wearing masks or standing 6 feet apart could be seen in a line outside of Pub 2 in Normal on Wednesday night. General Manager Luke Rocco said the staff is doing its best to enforce social distancing inside the building, but he said the business does not have the means to monitor the line, and it has asked customers not to form a line. Because we are operating at a limited capacity, there is a line outside even though we are asking people not to wait in line, Rocco said, but we don't have the ability to secure the lines. Masks are required upon entry and must be worn when guests are away from their tables, he said. We are happy to adhere to any guidelines that are thrust upon us, said Rocos. Safety is our number one concern. And this front page story is about education. It's headlined, ISU Students Petition for Tuition Refund. It's Dateline Normal. Illinois State University students are taking to social media and an online petition to express their frustration, if not anger, with paying the same tuition and fees even though most instruction has been moved to online delivery. However, the university says costs continue regardless of the mode of instruction. The faculty are working very hard, whether they are teaching in person or an online class, said ISU spokesman Eric Jome. It's the same amount of work, and in many cases, more work, to prepare an online class. The student's account page on ISU's website states, tuition and fees will not be refunded in the event instruction occurs remotely for any part of the 2020-21 academic year. Historically, Jome said, the university does not differentiate in tuition between online classes and those taught in person. But that did not stop Colby Burton from stating a petition on change.org that said, lowering the tuition for online classes should only be right since the students signed up for in-class. More than 3,300 people signed the petition by midday on Thursday. The Pantograph was unable to contact Burton, who is not listed as a currently registered student, but other students expressed their views. We are charged for the full experience of the classroom, but we are not given it, said Andrew Loy, a senior in history and social science education, speaking to the Pantograph in an interview earlier this month. I believe that this is unethical for an educational institution, and especially for one that has prided itself on keeping tuition prices as low as possible. Loy, who lives in Bloomington, said he appreciated the university taking student health into consideration, but said students are sacrificing their education and finances. Senior Evan Shook, a renewable energy major from Normal, said it was unfair to have to pay an athletics fee when games are postponed or canceled and for other facilities. Jones said, our buildings are open and services are functioning, although he acknowledged we realize some students may not be physically in town. Shook said, even though facilities are open, some have restrictions on capacity. In the case of the Student Fitness Center, students must make appointments, he said. Shook said when he first received his bill for this academic year, I thought there was an error, but there wasn't. He went from paying $1,384.20 in mandatory fees for 15 credit hours last spring to $1,724.48 for 16 credit hours this fall. And in addition, the cost of health insurance went up $11 for fall semester to $281. That is a flat charge, not based on credit hours taken. Mandatory fees this academic year are $107.78 per credit hour, up from $92.28. Those fees cover a number of things, from general activities, Redbird Arena, and the Bone Student Center, to athletic and recreation facilities, health and wellness, and academic enhancements. The only part of the mandatory fees that increased was academic enhancement, which jumped from $12.50 per credit hours to $28 per credit hour. That money goes towards academic infrastructure, which includes technological infrastructure, said Joan. The university has spent money on technology upgrades and training, as well as increased capacity and licenses for things such as Zoom, a platform used for classes and meetings. Shook said he would like to see more detail on where the money goes. I understand the university has different licenses and fees they have to pay for our online education, but the lack of transparency is quite disheartening, he said. And the last front page story is a national one about election 2020. Its headline, Biden calls for national unity, Democratic Party rallies for November 3rd. It's datelined Wilmington, Delaware. Joe Biden was poised to accept the Democratic presidential nomination Thursday night, achieving the pinnacle of his nearly five-decade political career in the climax of the most unorthodox national convention in modern history. He's also hoping for initial steps to not only unify the diverse Democratic Party, but a deeply divided America as well. The former vice president, who at 77 years old would be the oldest president ever elected, was set to be feted by family and former foes as he becomes the Democratic Party's official standard bearer in the campaign to defeat President Donald Trump in November. A day after California Senator Kamala Harris became the first black woman to accept a major party's vice presidential nomination, Biden campaign co-chair Lisa Blunt Rochester, a Delaware congresswoman, predicted that Thursday would be a whole nother level of special. The convention was continuing at press time. Above all, Biden was expected to focus on uniting the deeply divided nation as Americans grapple with the long and fearful health crisis, the related economic devastation, and a national awakening on racial justice. And now let's go to the local and state news. This story is a great big photograph of a lady with a big American flag behind her, and the caption to it says, Sail to Aid Veterans. Diane Hawk, a longtime member of the Veterans of Foreign Wars Auxiliary Post 454, unwraps a donated plaque that will be among several hundred items on sale during the VFW's group sale fundraiser Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Post at 1006 East Lincoln Street in Bloomington. Times for the market are 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Friday and Saturday and 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sunday. The VFW uses profits from the event to fund supplies and visits with veterans at veterans' homes around the state of Illinois. And the plaque that Diane Hawk is holding up in this picture reads, Prayer, when life gets too hard to stand, kneel. Our next local story is headlined, Chapter 11 Eyed for Mall Owner. It's Dateline Bloomington. The owner of Eastland Mall says it plans to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy by October 1st. CBL and Associates Properties, the Tennessee-based shopping center owner stricken by the coronavirus outbreak, said it reached an agreement with some lenders to reorganize its finances, which were hit by lockdowns, store failures, and more online shopping over the past 6 months. Should CBL gain approvals and move forward, it would be the first shopping center real estate investment trust in the U.S. to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy amid the pandemic. CBL bought Eastland in October 2005, in a $516.9 million three-property deal that included Hickory Point Mall in Macon County and another in the Kansas City area. The mall at the time had Bergner's, Famous Bar, Kohl's, JCPenney, and Sears as anchors. Eastland opened in 1967. Early tenants included Kinney Shoes, 31 Flavors Ice Cream, The Singer Company, and Topsy's Sidewalk Cafe. Today, The 760,833 square foot mall has room for 76 stores. Malls have been hit hard by the coronavirus as shoppers have stayed home, retailers quit paying rent, and stores shut down, some permanently. Their financial woes, spurred in part by overbuilding and online shopping long before the virus hit, have led some to contemplate a new future in which malls act less as indoor shopping centers and more as town squares with, for instance, offices, apartments, restaurants, and retail outlets. CBL, owner of 63 enclosed malls, said that all day-to-day operations of its shopping centers will continue as normal and that customers, tenants, and partners could expect business as usual. And this next local story is about the local impact of COVID-19. It's headlined, County Adds 42 Cases, McLean County Total at 872, Deaths in DeWitt and LaSalle. It's datelined Bloomington. 42 more McLean County residents have been diagnosed with COVID-19, the County Health Department said Thursday, one day after the county reported a single-day record high of 51 cases. Elsewhere, the virus claimed the lives of a DeWitt County man in his 80s and a LaSalle County woman in her 90s. The fatalities were the first COVID deaths in DeWitt County and the 38th in LaSalle County. David Remmert, administrator of the DeWitt Piatt Bi-County Health Department, said the DeWitt County man had fallen and hit his head about a month ago, was hospitalized, and tested positive for COVID but did not have symptoms. In McLean County, the 42 new cases mean that 872 county residents have been diagnosed with COVID since March 19th, 139 so far this week. Of the total, 4 are hospitalized, including 1 in an intensive care unit, McLean County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight said, and those numbers were unchanged from Wednesday. But 188 are isolating at home, an increase of 33 people from Wednesday. McKnight reported that 664 people have recovered, an increase of 9 since Wednesday. No new COVID-related deaths were announced in McLean County on Thursday. 16 people have died, with the most recent death reported on Monday. McKnight broke down the 42 new cases by age range. 1 person was under the age of 1. 9 were between 10 and 19. 19 were in their 20s. 3 were in their 30s. 1 was in their 40s. 5 in their 50s, and 4 in their 60s. Of the more than 38,000 COVID tests conducted in McLean County since March, 2.3% have tested positive. The positivity rate for the 7 days ending Wednesday was 3.3%. The 7-day positivity rate one day earlier was 2.7%. In LaSalle County, in addition to the death, that county's health department reported 23 new COVID cases on Thursday, bringing that county's total to 1,033 cases so far this year. The new COVID cases ranged in age from males in their teens to women in their 80s, LaSalle County Health Department Public Information Officer Jenny Berry said. 8 more people are out of isolation, meaning 525 of LaSalle County's 1,033 people have recovered. Tazewell County Health Department reported 49 new cases, bringing that county's new total to 855. Livingston County Health Department reported 4 new cases, including 1 hospitalization, bringing that county's total to 161. Ford County Health Department announced 6 new cases, all associated with an outbreak at Accolade Healthcare, a long-term care facility in Paxton. Ford County has had 68 confirmed cases. Public health efforts are greatly reliant upon individuals acting responsibly and taking actions that evidence shows will protect them and those around them, McKnight said in a statement. Avoiding large gatherings, maintaining social distance, practicing basic hygiene practices, and wearing a face covering are small things that we can all do to lessen the impact of this virus and save lives. As a community, it is vital for us to show that we care by coming together and prioritizing public health prevention practices that lower our risk of becoming infected or infecting others, McKnight said. It's about your own health, and it's also about the health of those around you that you might infect unknowingly, she continued. That individual could be your friend, your parent or grandparent, or another member of the public that might be more vulnerable to severe complications from the virus. McKnight discouraged people from attending or hosting large in-person gatherings. Illinois State University President Larry Dietz earlier this week, following a large off-campus gathering last weekend where hundreds of people were not socially distancing and not wearing masks, urged students to avoid large crowds. McKnight said that even young, healthy individuals can have complications from the virus and said face coverings remain an effective tool to slow the spread. People who test positive for COVID-19 should stay home and isolate from others, she said. The health department follows up with people who have tested positive to discuss what they need to do and how long they need to isolate. Anyone who has been within 6 feet of a confirmed COVID case for at least 15 minutes without wearing a mask should self-quarantine at home for 14 days. At the COVID-19 testing site at the McLean County Fairgrounds, people were tested on Wednesday, McLean County Emergency Management Agency reported Thursday. 661 people were tested that day. That testing site is open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily to anyone who can complete the nasal self-swab test. And statewide, Illinois Department of Public Health reported 1,832 new COVID cases Thursday and 27 additional fatalities, including the deaths in DeWitt and LaSalle counties. And so far this year, 213,721 Illinoisans have had COVID and 7,833 have died. The statewide positivity rate for cases as a percent of total tests for the 7 days ending Wednesday was 4.4%, and as of Wednesday night, 1,519 Illinoisans were hospitalized with COVID and 357 of them were in intensive care units. And this story is accompanied by a photograph of a testing site, an outdoor tent, and the caption reads, Amanda McNeely of Colfax drives up to the McLean County Health Department's first mobile rural testing site for COVID-19 outside of the Colfax Village Hall on July 23rd. And today's Flick Fact is, there are, of course, two school districts inside of Bloomington Normal, Bloomington's District 87 and Normal Base Unit 5. But can you name how many school districts there are in all of McLean County? 5? 7? Even more? And the answer is, amazingly, there are 11 school districts in McLean County. That is according to state education statistics. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, August 21st, 2020. I look forward to reading part two with you soon.